go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benson.
And I'm Ben Bolin.
And today we got a suggestion from a young listener that I think a lot of people are really going to like. And let me just quickly read through the email here and tell you what young Carson, who is age 14, would like us to talk about. That's Carson with a K, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I remember this email.
Age 14. He says, I've had a growing interest in cars, engines, racing, etc. I really love listening to your podcast on a weekly basis. You cover a lot of interesting topics. I think that a good show idea might be model cars. And we've talked about scale model cars, I know, lots of times, right?
Yep.
But Carson is specifically talking about the plastic model cars.
Hmm.
And the cars that, you know, you buy in a kit in a box and glue them together, you know, with the temperamental super glue type material.
Well, that depends on your skill level, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, he says that he knows that at one time in history, you know, plastic model building was a huge hobby and a lot of enthusiasts.
Right on.
But recently it's become a lost art to kids my age, he says. His dad shares his fond memories of building models with him when he was younger. And says that, you know, he was curious as to whether you or I built plastic model kits when we were young as well.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some other listeners. And he thinks that this might be a good idea for, I guess, our general audience to talk about and you know, listen to and see if maybe it sparks a memory.
Well, congratulations, Carson. We hope that you're listening right now because we also think it's a good idea. We're on the same page with you. We're not the kind of guys who would read a listener mail at the beginning and then say, but we're not going to do that.
No.
What a great idea. And thank you for writing into us. So let's first answer one of his questions before we get into plastic models. Scott, were you one of the kids who built plastic models?
Absolutely, I was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would guess that you could probably guess that, you know, by just the way I've been talking over the years. You know,
and you still have a scale model collection.
I do, but they're the metal kind that
right,
you buy in a box and they're all done and, you know, ready to go. But I did at one point build a lot of plastic model kits, and they, you know, met their demise many different ways. But over the years, lots and lots of plastic model kits. How about you?
Yeah, growing up, my father and I would build them together, kind of what Carson's talking
that
about.
That is a good hobby for a father-son.
Yeah, it's a great hobby, especially when we started. I was pretty young, so it was me sort of standing next to my dad, and I would help with the parts that are hard to mess up, like punching out. You know how they would come on the grid, punching out different components, but I was not in charge of the glue. And for most of my model building career, decals remained my sworn enemy.
Yeah, that's the best way to learn, though, watching somebody else. Getting best tips and practices mm-hmm. along the way and then, you know, honing that skill and then finally building a model of your own that you can, you know, be proud to display, right?
And something tells me that we have a lot of expert modelers in our audience.
I would assume that we do. Now, besides Carson and his father,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure that there are plenty of people out there who have attempted this and maybe, you know, successfully or not successfully,
mm-hmm.
but still enjoy the process.
I would think. Yeah, and it's the assembly part of this makes it a great gift for anybody who has a little bit of an engineering knack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from Legos to Lincoln Logs to Kinects, things like that. Things where you put something together. You take individual pieces and you make a larger object of some sort. But still, I'm going to say I'm not going to say anything bad about Legos or Lincoln Logs, just to say that model cars are a completely different animal.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not talking about the snap together models, if you're talking about
right.
the kind that are the glue together process.
Right. Which is where we're going, right?
There are a lot of different levels of difficulty.
Yeah.
You can find the kits and they'll be clearly marked, you know, if this is a beginner kit, if this mm-hmm. is an expert kit and everything in between. But there's so many different levels to this. That I think everybody can find their own area and be comfortable with assembling a model, whether it's a, you know, one that you just buy that has 10 pieces that snap
mm-hmm.
together with no glue required.
Right.
And there's lots of those out there.
Sure.
Or if it's, you know, an expert kit that later requires you to, you know, completely rig the thing together with, you know, lifelike wiring and everything else that goes in, you know, that's involved with the vehicle. I don't know. I think there's so many different levels that everybody can find their own spot.
Absolutely. And along our path on this podcast where we learn more about these skill levels, we're also going to tell you, Carson, and the rest of our listeners, some things that you might not know about plastic model kits, because here's the weird part. This is pretty old. These have a history.
Yeah, you know, we're approaching 100 years of plastic model kits in history.
Yeah.
We're getting there. Not quite. We're about, what, 80-something at this point.
Yeah, we've got some time.
Yeah, 80 years or so. It's been around for a long, long time, though. And it goes all the way back to the 1930s, right?
Right, yeah. Now, as we know, cars were around at the time, but one of our key words here is plastic.
Mm-hmm.
So we're also talking about the evolution of plastic models. So in our search, we found that the very first plastic model cars were built by a company called Frog in the United Kingdom.
Hmm. Okay.
And these, of course, these aren't a new idea. The way we hear about them in America goes back to a company called Hawk.
Okay.
You've heard Hawk, right?
I have, yeah. And that was about 10 years later, because we're talking about like the 1940s or so when the popularity of this type of model spread over to the – or even just the notion of this kind of model.
Right.
Eventually spread over to the United States because, as you said, they were happening in the UK. Now, prior to this, I can only assume, Ben, that there were – plenty of wooden models, and there were plenty of metal models.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, other. Well, I mean, I guess that would probably be it, wooden metal.
Mm-hmm.
But the plastic models didn't appear until the 30s and then the 40s here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they start to make these model kits that, yeah, they're not really all that, I guess, developed.
They're not elaborate by any means.
No, nothing like what we see now. In fact, later we'll talk about some really, really elaborate models. But, I mean, you can see that, you know, 10 years to spread over to here, then maybe another 10 years here in the States before a lot of plastic manufacturers decided, well, this may be a way to make some money because people are gaining interest in this. I'm going to make a kit a little bit better, a little bit more detailed to reflect what's really on the streets. And, you know, just by adding little, you know, bits and pieces here that make it stand out among other models on the shelf, that's how they get their sales. So, you know, in the 1950s, and then we get up into – I hope I'm not jumping way too far ahead.
Oh, this is great.
Then,
this is great.
But in the 1960s, that's when these model kits became really, really popular, and the process by which they make them completely changed at that point.
Now, yeah, okay. Which process are you talking about specifically?
You know, I shouldn't say completely changed, but I guess maybe we should talk about the types of models that there are. And, you know, they're injection molded, really.
Right.
You know, the ones that most people are probably thinking about.
The ones that are going to be very popular.
Yeah.
Because injection molding is the way that injection molded kits work economically is that you have to be able to sell a lot of them in order to justify that manufacturing process.
Correct, yeah.
So that means that when you have a more obscure model, that you may also have an alternative means of making them. Now, two things we should say, for everybody who's listening to hear us talk about model aircraft, that's going to be a different episode because we found so much, right?
And ships and, you know,
submarines.
There's other stuff out there that we will most likely get to in another.
Mm-hmm.
I think airplanes for sure, just because there's so many out there.
Yeah.
Maybe even shipbuilding.
Yeah.
But we're gonna keep our focus on this one. You're right, on cars and trucks.
Yeah, and then the next thing that we should also talk about is, of course, these models that we're mentioning for cars and trucks are not the entire story. We're hitting some high level things that we're fascinated by.
Exactly. And neither one of us claim to be expert model builders or know everything about the craft, because I'll tell you, when you get into these hobby chat rooms and forums, oh my gosh, there are some old world craftsmen. I don't know how better to say it other than you won't believe what some of these people can put together. It's amazing. They spend you know, hours and hours on the tiniest detail, and it makes a big difference in the way the overall model looks. I mean, there's some real
craftsmen. They're craftspeople.
Yeah. Mm. Hobby geniuses.
And
let's get back to the injection molding though, because injection molding, now it's a, you know, obviously it's a great big metal press that comes together.
Right.
Two pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Plastic is forced into this thing and heated and then forced in.
Heated plastic forced in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And out pops this form that has all these different parts on it. Now the form is called a what?
A mold?
Nope.
No, wait. What are you talking about?
The form that pops out. I can tell you.
Wait. What are you talking about? Yeah, tell me.
The pieces that are all hooked together, and usually, typically, in one color, right? It's called a sprue.
Sprue.
It's called a sprue tree. It looks like spruce without the C.
Yeah, sprue tree, but
sprue.
Okay, I didn't know what you were talking about.
No, that's all right. I didn't mean to stump you, Ben, because I know you know it. But the sprue is the typical thing that you would think when you pull out the kit and you hold up that piece that has, you know, the fenders, the roof of the car, everything is all laid out in a flat arrangement. I didn't mean to stump you on that.
Not at all.
I know it's in your notes. It's buried deep in there. But but the sprue, that idea goes way back to the beginning when injection molding was really the only way that they did these.
Yes.
And I found out something else. This kind of surprised me.
What?
As a kid, you know, all the pieces would be one color on the sprue.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'd get like a model and it would all be black or gray or silver or whatever color it was. Now, Ben, they've got some models that, and I don't know how recently this all happened, but you can have one sprue tree with multiple colors.
Huh.
Which is kind of neat because, you know, it adds a lot to that model and it makes it a lot simpler. After construction, if you don't have to paint every single thing, or unless you choose to, but kind of as it comes out of the kit, it's much better looking initially.
Now, I want to take a second. I know we're jumping around to make two pretty cool points that these are different from the other two. One point that should be emphasized here is that a lot of people might not be aware that in the early days of these model kits, they were often not thought of as toys, but they were used by car manufacturers.
Oh, very good.
To show, as promotional devices, as also something to exhibit to other people. So the idea of giving these to kids or private citizens to build their own, is really a second, and you'll hear people argue it was also a secondary.
Ben, that's a really cool fact, Ben.
Yeah.
That's really neat because you dug that up. I know from some of the research I just briefly read about it, but I had totally forgotten about that part. That they brought around these models to kind of show customers, really.
This is what we're building next year. Do you want one?
Take a look at this. It's on my desk. You can't have that. But, the manufacturer built that and sent it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those models are available online for purchase, obviously. They're very, very valuable.
They're rare at this point.
They are rare. In some cases, you can even buy, the box that those originally came in that is also very expensive. Just an empty box from these displays, which is really incredible.
Just to get a point about how popular these things were. Dave Fisher, who wrote a great article about plastic model kit development in the States, Dave Fisher has a fact from one of his articles that says a survey in Boys Life magazine in the 1950s found that over 80% of the boys responding listed plastic model building as their hobby.
Wow. You know what? I almost would think that it would be – now, 80% is high.
80% is pretty high.
Given that we're talking about Boys Life magazine and everything surrounding that, what that's all about – and the popularity of model building, I almost would have think that would be 100%.
Well, again, as you pointed out, in the 60s, it really blows up even more. So I bet in the 60s it's 100.
That's true.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Or very, very close to 100.
Okay, let's call it 90, 95.
That's right. The other kids were interested in, outdoors stuff.
But anyway, I'm sorry, man. I'm so excited. I rolled all over you.
No. It's all right.
Let's run down the types of models.
Just the types of models real quick, and then we can move on. But so we talked about injection molded models, right?
Yes.
And there are also a newer type, which is called vacuform models. Now, that's a plastic sheet that is heated and then kind of sucked down into, I guess, a male mold form.
Yeah.
And I don't know, have you ever seen anything vacuum form before?
There are videos on YouTube, I think.
Yeah, there's plenty of things. In fact, if you want to see something really cool, and this is not model related, but
yeah.
I watched a show the other day about how they make jacuzzis, you know, hot tubs.
Oh, the shell for the jacuzzi.
Yeah, the entire shell, you know, the top shell, it's usually got kind of like a glitter to it or something. You know, like that.
Right.
I don't know what the material is now at the top of my head, but
yeah.
They vacuum form the jacuzzi into the, you know, the form itself, the, like what they drop in into the tub, into the
wow.
surrounding wooden part. It's really, really cool to see it happening. It's neat to see something vacuum formed. So, I don't know. It's worthwhile just taking a look online and,
yeah.
and searching for that.
And
so,
then there's another one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Resin casting?
Yeah, and this is resin. I just have resin epoxy models is what I mm-hmm. call it. But that's kind of the newest thing, right?
Yes. It's also, this is the only time I'm going to mention money in my usual way. It's the kits are also a little more expensive.
Well, of course they are. Yeah, this is a better put together model, I guess. Initially assembled, right?
Right.
No, I don't know if I said that the right way. I don't mean the way that somebody puts it together at home. I mean the way that it's built at the factory,
right.
And shipped
yeah.
to you. These resin epoxy models, I guess, they're a little more expensive, but
they have more detail.
Yeah, they're more detailed, and they're just a better quality, I guess, mm-hmm. than, you know, like a step up from the vacuum form or the injection molding, I guess.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then the ultimate, this is the big daddy models.
Oh, the creme de la creme.
Exactly. Well, hit us with it. What are
they? Wait, you do it.
Okay, these are the scratch-built cars. Now, these are the true artisans of the craft here, as far as I'm concerned. These are the guys that make every part of the car.
By hand, or
truck.
By hand, no kit smashing, no mixing other kits together.
Do you recall, Ben, when we talked about that really cool Ferrari, the PB312 or whatever
the
model that actually ran, and the guy had spent, what was it, like 12 or 15 years building this thing?
More than 10 years.
Yeah, that was an example of a scratch-built model.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that one was a running model, and that's different. He machined everything and made the engine actually operate.
That's extraordinary even among scratch-built.
Yeah, but scratch-built models, any kind of scratch-built model, really,
mm-hmm.
they're pretty amazing because someone puts the detail in. I mean, they think about – they just look at a bunch of raw materials and picture the final product and build it. And that's the difference. They don't just buy a kit off the shelf at mm-hmm. the local hobby shop for $20 and decide that, you know, I'm going to put it together on a weekend. This is more of a labor of love, I guess, because they spend – some of them spend literally years and years constructing these models.
And if you get a chance, guys, again, check out that Ferrari. It's worth it.
Oh, definitely.
Because it runs. Okay, the last one then is one that I think is my favorite. It's close to scratch built, but it's sort of a remix kind of thing where you take multiple kits.
Awesome.
And you squeeze them together. Now, this is the kind of thing, Carson, I don't know if you have ever if you ever mess around with Legos or stuff like that, but for any listener who has, you've probably had that moment when you were a kid or playing with Legos, and not that you have to be a kid. I have Legos at home right now.
Definitely not. I still play with Legos.
Yeah, full disclosure, we're on Team Lego. But the thing that's neat is that you can take one Lego set and another Lego set, and then you can just make whatever you want. You're limited only by the pieces that you can find.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this second thing of, not scratch building, but I would say I've heard it called kit mixing. I've heard it called kit bashing.
Ah, that's a term I've heard, kit bashing, which is kind of strange, but, it sounds like you're smashing it, but, kit mixing, that seems like a better way to say it, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Making a Franken kit, I guess.
Franken kit. I like that
Something
one.
Something like that.
Way
I don't
better.
Know. But, I mean, I guess you just take two kits of, you could even take similar models if you wanted to.
Sure.
But I think a lot of times they take, you know, different models. I mean,
mm-hmm.
something completely different.
Yeah.
And make something entirely new, which is really a cool idea. I mean, when you're talking about cars, you know, you could take, you know, it's exactly like building like a rat rod or something like
yeah.
that, or a hot rod of your own in the garage. But it's on a much, much smaller scale, and you don't have to have, you know, the expensive metalworking tools that you do. You just need a good X-Acto knife, a lot of imagination. Time,
patience.
Very good.
So we've talked about, I guess that's four, counting the plastic models, we've talked about several types of mm-hmm. models, both in the way they're manufactured and in the way they're assembled by users or fabricated by users.
Can I mention one thing here?
Yeah.
I don't know where you're going. I don't mean to interrupt, but I think it's a good place to mention this.
What's that?
When I was a kid, there was always a problem with the metal parts. You know,
because you had mixed metal and plastic.
Yeah, they had the metal they had the plastic plated metal parts that were in the kit. You know, looked like a chrome bumper or whatever.
Yeah.
A lot of people like to paint metal parts. You know, so they have different textures, different tones, different, you know, the real feel.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people take these to the extreme. You know, they decide that, you know, that's not really the way that bracket looked. It wasn't that color metal. It was more of a brushed aluminum. You know, or more of a brushed,
sure. And then have a book of photographs of the actual vehicle from various different angles.
Yeah, oh, yeah. So people do this all the time, right? And there's a lot of different metal textures and colors and like we mentioned, brushed aluminum.
Rural juror.
Yeah, exactly. Versus like brushed steel. You know, that's the difference to them. They need to know what was what. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of different options now for chrome or metal parts. I guess there's some really good spray products now that weren't out there a long time ago. You know, you had pretty much the Testers brand chrome paint that you could use, and that was about it. You know, you could mix different colors together. But now, to begin with, let's just say the spray on chrome now is much better than it was back then. There's a product called All-Clad, to mention one, you know, specifically, but that's supposedly a really, really good one for all types of metal finishes. But here's the cool thing, Ben. You can now buy photo-etched metal parts for your models. And some kits actually come with these photo-etched metal parts. You know, it adds an extreme level of detail to your kit. But other kits, I mean, how can I put this? If you have a model, let's say, of a 1960 Cadillac, and you search photo-etched parts for this specific brand, you know, manufacturer, 1960 Cadillac, you might be able to find some really, really detailed, realistic photo-etched metal parts that have a lot of detail in them. We're talking like, you know, you can see the rivets in them.
Wow.
You can see, the proper texture to the metal. They're very expensive. But again, you can buy them separate, or you can buy them with the kit if you buy the appropriate kit. You know, a very expensive kit to begin with.
Yeah, and one point we should make when we're talking about some of this detail, if you want to become involved with these sorts of modeling, whether it's out of the box, whether it's kit bashing, whether you are one of the brave pioneers who will attempt a scratch-built car. Mm-hmm. One thing that's interesting to know is that there are model clubs you can join. Depending on where you live, there's probably one in your town or in your area, especially if you're in a city. And these things are really cool because this gives you a chance to check out other models, to learn tricks of the trade from people who do this. This also, if you choose, gives you the chance to enter competitions.
Yes. And from what I've heard, they're very, very helpful. I mean, I've read, that's not just what I've heard, it's what I've read, because I've seen many cases where someone is, you know, a brand new person to the forum and saying, I'm just getting into this. Tell me what tools I need, you know, to begin. I'm building this kit. I'm having this little problem here. What can I do to get around this? And people are very helpful.
Super supportive.
Very, very supportive. And you know, they're trying to, you know, let someone come into their world, I guess, and saying, you know, like, of course we want this to continue on, and let's see what you're capable of, because here's what we're capable of. It's just a neat way for people to share. Now, it's great that's out there, because, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, you didn't have that. It was anybody, you know, that you happened to bump into at the local hobby shop that was also buying a model. You might say, like, oh, you're a modeler too. You know, that's about it. But outside of, you know, like, when you didn't have the internet, you know, didn't have these forums, these groups, these hobby groups, these interest groups, it just wasn't possible. So this is a great tool.
Yeah, this is a great tool. And this, you know, Scott, you and I have talked before about how a lot of brick and mortar stores have had a tougher time with the advent of online purchasing and stuff. Think of these forums if you're a potential model builder. Think of the forums online as sort of a replacement or substitute for the conversations you would have in person at your hobby shop.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not to say that you shouldn't go to the hobby shop, because
you absolutely should if you're lucky enough to be around one.
I think that's exactly where you need to go, because they've got stuff that you just wouldn't even think of. You wouldn't even think of searching for that specific tool, that type of paint. you know, any of that, unless you hear about it somewhere. But honestly, to stand there and stare at that wall of models looking back at you, that's really cool. That's
really
a lot of fun
neat.
To be able to pick out what your next project is going to be out of, you know, the 500 choices that are available. And a lot of local hobby shops are really, really good about this. And they're, you know, they'll even order things for you if you want. If you say, you know, like, I heard that there's a new model by this company, I'd like to get it. You know, Testers is making a new model. Can you get it for me? A lot of times they'll be very, very.
They'll go out of their way.
Yeah, sure. No, no, you know, not a problem, not a question at all. You know what?
What?
We mentioned brick and mortar. I think this is a good time to mention the museum.
Oh, yes.
How about
okay.
that? We cannot let this episode go without mentioning the museum.
We'll be mad at ourselves.
Get this. It's the International Museum of Plastic Models. That's the title of the place, and it's in Zephyr Hills, Florida.
Yep.
Which is central Florida. I think it's – I looked this up earlier. And I don't have my note. But I think it's somewhere around like north and west of Lakeland, Florida. It's in – you know, closer to the Gulf but still central Florida.
Right.
Zephyr Hills. 4,000 models on display, Ben. And we're talking about like everything from, you know, the scratch-built kits all the way down to, you know, the earliest kits, some of these rarities.
Mm-hmm.
They have models for sale. They build models on consignment.
Yep.
The collection's been growing since 1975. That's when this guy started this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really an impressive collection. A lot of them are shown in, you know, scenario. I don't know what you call those, dioramas maybe.
Yeah, right.
With, you know, the appropriate backgrounds, displays. Mm-hmm. Others are just, you know, on a shelf. But he's got a little bit of everything. Some of the models that he sells, I don't know if you've checked out his online site.
Yeah.
The
models, quite a few.
Some of them are really old. I mean, classic antique models that that were never assembled. You know, he's got the
in the box. He's got them in the box.
Yeah, original models in the box. You know, and you know, like Model T or whatever you want to get. He's got a few of them, and they're not unreasonably priced.
No, especially considering how difficult they could be to find. Only about 30% of the collection is on display at any given time. This guy's got his contact information on eBay, on the website for the museum, and it sounds like he really cares about this because he also talks about the local hobby stores like Warwick Hobbies in Fort Lauderdale, Zephyr Hills House of Crafts and Stuff.
Yeah, he's very passionate about this, and the thing is, Ben, when you look at the photos of that museum, I cannot believe that's 30%. That looks like 4,000 models right there. So I can't imagine what you know, all 4,000 display models must look like in one spot. It's really, really a neat display. And you know, the hallways are just covered. The ceilings are covered with airplane models hanging from the ceiling, and there's plenty of cars and trucks and trains and everything else that's there. I don't know exactly all of, you know, what's there, but
got the history of the model at hand, also a little bit of chronology, and organized by scale, which I appreciate.
Yeah, that's,
you know, because some people have decided to focus on a specific scale, and he's got some really cool stuff. He's got Highway Pioneer series, which is one of the. I think it was Hawk manufactured those.
Oh, that's early on. That's like Now, Hawk is one of the companies that was in the 1940s, I believe, right?
Right, yeah.
Or was it even earlier? I think that was one of the ones that came to the United States, right? One of the first manufacturers of these kits.
Well, I can't remember if it was Revell or Hawk.
Okay. Well, anyways, it's an early, early model.
I think it's Revell.
Okay.
But yeah, it's an early model. The point we're making with this is that this guy has a lot of stuff. It's in Zephyr Hills, Florida. It's not, if you live in Florida, it might be worth your time the next time you're on the way somewhere.
I think if you're in Orlando, why not make a half day trip and just go check this thing out and then come back? Cause it's not that far away, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's an easy drive from Orlando. International Museum of Plastic Models, it's worth the trip, I think.
Hey, yeah.
One last model that I'd like to talk about here, if we
yes.
got a chance.
Yeah.
You mentioned scale.
Right.
What would you think of a 1-to-1 scale model car?
A 1-to-1 scale model car.
Now, Ben, you may say, that's just a car.
That's just a car.
Now, this one, I knew you would say that. Now, this is just a, this is a full-size car. a true race car. It's a it's actually a 1-to-1 scale model of an Aston Martin, a 1959 model, the one that actually won Le Mans that year. I think it was Carroll Shelby and Roy Salvadori drove this to a Le Mans victory in 1959. They have recreated this
gigantic sprue tree.
Aston Martin on a gigantic sprue tree, you're right, that's on casters, but it's 1-to-1 scale and it's laid out in exactly the manner that that a model kit would be. You know, it has the racing decals on the side, the seats and everything.
That looks so cool.
It's really, really neat.
But it doesn't come with any engine or
No, it doesn't have any engine.
It's not an actual Aston Martin.
It's all bodywork, wheels, interior, steering wheel. There's a hatch signed by Carroll Shelby in there in
that's
a glass
amazing.
Case. It's really, really
cool.
Is
this like a museum piece or can people buy it?
It's a museum piece that eventually went on up for auction.
Oh, okay.
I don't know where it ended up, but the projected auction price for this thing was about $31,000 to, I think they said $46,000 would have been the bidding range of this thing.
Ah, yeah.
I don't know what it eventually sold for, who it went to, any of that, but this is pretty amazing. I mean, the whole display, just to give you an idea, it's almost 21 feet long, mm-hmm. it's about 11 and a half feet high, and it weighs around 1,300 pounds. So this is a huge display to have somewhere. You'd have to have, you know, a warehouse almost, or a front lobby of a giant downtown building.
Oh, really? At the very least, really high ceilings in your apartment.
No, this isn't something you could wheel into your garage, or even you wouldn't want to take it apart and try to assemble the actual model because there's a lot missing. But it's really, really beautiful.
It does look really nice.
It's a neat thing to have.
So let's see what else we have. I've got. Well, we have pointed out that the demographic has changed over time from the 30s to the modern here in aught 13, if we can call it that.
Aught 13, okay.
In 2013, over that time, the demographic has changed, and it's aged. There, as we said in the very beginning, that there are fewer. Younger people, young boys or whatever, assembling these models, that doesn't mean that this industry is by any means going away because there are people that I would say you can call professional modelers, mm-hmm. professional model builders.
As a matter of fact, that museum that we mentioned, mm-hmm. they build models on consignment.
Yep.
So you hand them a model or you tell them what you'd like and they build one for you. Does that kind of defeat the purpose? I think to me, it's a sense of pride when I build something like that and put it on the shelf. I know it was when I built them.
Yeah, you're on the same page with me with that. I think building, for us, building a model is clearly the most fun part.
But in some ways, if you want something custom,
want
something original, something that no one else has, you know, like let's say you're an executive and you've got a giant mahogany desk and a huge, you know, a giant office and you want something to put on the shelf behind you, a replica of that Aston Martin that you truly drive it, you know, in on the weekends, and it has to look exactly like this photograph, that may be the case where you have somebody else build it for you.
Yes, and also if it's a gift for somebody maybe.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So that will work and it makes sense. And the one thing that – there are two things that are sort of related. These are my tangents.
Okay.
Can I go on some tangents?
Absolutely.
All right. Come with me then on these tangents. This reminds me of a friend I have who became very into G.I. Joes specifically. And he went past the point where he felt like he needed to own all of the, you know, all of the different vehicles or action figures they put out in series. And he got to the point where he says, I'm going to start making my own. So he's doing this sort of kit mixing, kit bashing stuff with G.I. Joes.
Really?
Yeah. I had no idea it exists, but it's a big, it's a big thing. It's a big subculture, Scott. I don't even know if I can call it a subculture.
Friend, Ben, is this getting in the way? Like, is it causing him to have less room in his Monte Carlo or something like that? Or is he?
This friend is not me.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I am protecting his anonymity a bit because I don't know if he wants me talking about it.
Sure.
Actually, I don't want him to find out that we're talking about it on the air because then he would bug me to ask other people to send him more G.I. Joe stuff.
Well, then let's move on to tangent two.
Let's move on to tangent two, which is something I'm really excited about. Now, you know, I was a little bit jealous of you this weekend when you made it to the Mini Car Museum.
I did.
for the very last day.
Yeah, the very last day. It was pretty amazing. I think there's more podcast material to come from this thing. It was pretty eye opening to see all those mini and micro cars and mm-hmm. bubble cars together in one place. It was truly amazing. I was really, really happy. All right, Ben. So we've got some listener mail here.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, I figured we'll just get this one out of the way. But I'm going to mention it quickly and we'll move on to another one. How about that?
Sure thing.
I just wanted to mention another thank you to one of our listeners named Rudy. And Rudy was the one who tipped me off to the fact that the Microcar Museum was closing that very week.
Oh, I'm so glad you're reading this online.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, thank you, Rudy, again. I did make it out there for the final day. I hope you made it out as well. I don't know where Rudy lives. But, you know, the tip was invaluable. I mean, it was wonderful. So I made it on the final day and just mm-hmm. barely made it. So thanks again. Just wanted to say we appreciate it. Here's another one. This one is from Aaron. And Aaron had something to say about our sleeper car episode. And mentioned that, first of all, you know, our pronunciation of, I screwed that up, pronunciation of the Taurus, which he has always thought of as S-H-O instead of show. We said Taurus show. I've heard it both ways, but, you know, now that he says it, I do remember hearing it Taurus S-H-O.
Yep.
So just to clear that up, that's something we probably did the whole way through. Also mentioned that... I talked about the 94 to 96 Impala SS, which I thought looked wickedly fast from the factory.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's so much of a sleeper car because it looks fast. Another one that he mentions that I thought I had mentioned, and maybe I didn't, I wasn't sure, the Ford Mercury Marauder.
And the
Marauder is kind of souped-up version of the Grand Marquis, you know, the blacked-out windows and all-black, no-chrome type of vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool car. It also looks kind of fast, but I would say that one definitely gets more of a nod for a sleeper car than the Impala SS. That was my opinion, I guess, when I wrote
back
to him. But I thought that was pretty cool. You also mentioned the Fox Body Mustang LX models, the ones that had the 5-liter engines.
Right.
Very pedestrian looking, but, you know, there was
not pedestrian movie.
No, there was a beast within, you know. It had the 5-liter engine that was very powerful for the time. Instead of... It had the guts of the Mustang GT, but the body of a much, much simpler sedan vehicle.
Yeah.
And I don't know, was it a hatchback? Might have been a hatchback. Anyways, it was a very subdued looking vehicle, but it was wickedly fast. So again, Aaron, thank you for pointing those out. Those are a couple of good suggestions. So
mm-hmm.
we appreciate it.
And speaking of suggestions, we're going to go ahead and get out of here. We have fun with this. I am going to actually pick up some models for some people in my family.
Awesome.
Yeah, and hopefully they enjoy them. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be that guy who's like vicariously trying to make kids live through me or something. But I am going to go to our local brick-and-mortar hobby shop and pick up some things. Let us know if you have any recommendations. Let us know if there are some topics that you would like to hear more about. We're on Facebook. We're also on Twitter. And if you want to send us some suggestions, not too dirty jokes, funny stories, you know, whatever. We have an email address, too. It is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.